This is part one of a two-part Maine Currents special on the most recent proposal to industrialize Sears Island. I'm Amy Brown. Sears Island is a 941-acre uninhabited island in Searsport. It, like the rest of the region, is an unceded Wabanaki territory. The Wabanaki name for the island is Wissumkik, and it was used for hunting, fishing, and camping until European settlers and their ideas about private property came to the area. Next, the island was owned privately and used for farming until the early 1900s. It was then purchased by a railroad company with plans to develop a resort that never came to fruition. Since the 1960s, there have been proposals to build an oil refinery, a nuclear power plant, a few different versions of coal-fired electrical plants or coal gasification plants, a cargo port that would ship wood chips out from Western Maine to the rest of the world, and a liquefied natural gas facility on the island. By the 1980s, the state of Maine had their own plan to develop the island. They acquired the land, built a causeway, despite having only a permit for a bridge, and in the mid-80s destroyed 10 acres of wetlands on the island, resulting in EPA fines and remediation. The fight over developing the island for a cargo port continued to the 1990s. Among the groups that opposed the state's plan were the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club, Islesboro Islands Trust, the Conservation Law Foundation, and Maine Earth First. Finally, in 2007, the state and a group of stakeholders came to an agreement that set aside about two-thirds of the island for conservation and the remaining parcel for possible marine transportation uses in the future. Section 2 of the consent agreement reads in part, quote, "Mack Point shall be given preference as an alternative to port development on Sears Island. Maine DOT, in conjunction with interested parties, shall investigate and share factual information, which is not confidential or proprietary, on the extent to which Mack Point can, in fact, accommodate future marine transportation needs, including investigating the possibility for acquisition and/or development of additional acreage for such. This investigation will include exploring the feasibility of building a marginal pier at Mack Point, including Long Cove, for use as part of an expanded marine cargo port." The Maine Coast Heritage Trust now oversees the conservation easement, with Friends of Sears Island working with them to provide educational and recreational activities on the island, and things were pretty quiet for a while. In late 2021, word started to get out that the transportation section of the island was among places being considered for a possible site of an offshore wind terminal and launching area. The Mills administration convened a committee of stakeholders called the Offshore Wind Advisory Committee to evaluate three possible locations. A few months later, I talked with members of that committee who were concerned that the fix was in and that Sears Island was the site the Mills administration wanted. The process was just for show. Since that time, we've reported regularly on this latest threat to the island. Regular guests have included Rolf Olson of Friends of Sears Island and Steve Miller of Islesboro Islands Trust. They were both members of the advisory committee, and Steve Miller has been involved with efforts to protect the island for decades, as has another regular guest, Becky Bartovics, of the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club. They joined me at the end of February, after the governor announced that her administration had chosen Sears Island rather than the nearby, already industrialized Mack Point. The Natural Resources Council of Maine and the Maine AFL-CIO quickly reacted to the governor's announcement with celebratory emails, so we invited them to take part in this conversation as well, but they could not participate. We will hear from them in part two. Today we hear the reactions to the announcement about the site location from Steve Miller, Islesboro Islands Trust, Rolf Olson, Friends of Sears Island, and first, Becky Bartovics of the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club.
This is about my 20th year being involved with Sears Island. I was living on North Haven temporarily before I moved here in 2004. And I was invited to come to meet with folks up in Belfast, actually, by a friend of mine who no longer lives here, but was a Sierra Club member. And at that point, I was part of Penobscot Bay Alliance and continued to work with Penobscot Bay Alliance for some time, served as a member of the Sears Island Planning Initiative and then the Joint Use Planning Commission thereafter as a representative of Penobscot Bay Alliance. So that's when I got started with this. I've continued to be involved since. I have been on Sierra Club Executive Committee and as a member of Sierra Clubs to this day.
My name is Rolf Olson. I'm the Vice President of Friends of Sears Island. I'm the relative newcomer in that I've been involved with Sears Island as in this official kind of advocacy capacity and development for about 5 years. Maybe it's closer to six. I don't know. I've been retired and I live in Searsport. But I will even go back and say that when I first moved to Maine in 1973, even up in northern Maine, I do recall hearing the news about, you know, the proposed developments to develop plans to develop Sears Island and for various reasons. And now I'm actively involved. And I was also, of course, on the Offshore Wind Port Advisory Group with Steve and I guess 18 others or 17 others. And now we're looking at going forward from the decision having been made.
Steve Miller here. I'm executive director of Islesboro Islands Trust, and in one form or another, been dealing with Sears Island for over 50 years. So I'm the old guy. But it began back when, as Rolf was mentioning, the proposal to build an oil refinery on Sears Island. And I wasn't really personally very involved with that, but Islesboro as a community was. And then not too long after that failed, there was a proposal to build a nuclear power plant. And the community and that I was part of at that time had a warrant article to oppose the nuclear power plant on Sears Island. And that really, I guess, was kind of the beginning. But Islesboro Islands Trust became very involved with the cargo port proposal starting around 1985, when we actually were first formed as Islesboro Islands Trust. And we worked closely with Sierra Club, but also with Conservation Law Foundation to raise some really serious questions about that proposal. It did not make much sense to a lot of people and didn't make much sense to us. And we learned a great deal about the island during that time period, and we learned a great deal about politics and regulations as well. So this isn't new. Islesboro Islands Trust has been active in other regional advocacy issues, regional environmental issues, and we understand that in Penobscot Bay, probably really virtually the entire state, the environment is the economy, and we're here to protect that.
I want to go around and have you each say what your reaction was to the governor's announcement on February 20th that Sears Island had been selected as a site.
As I said, the announcement itself is no surprise. You know, it's been 2 years we've been working on this. And again, due to, you know, information that Islesboro Islands Trust has gotten through Freedom of Access requests, you know, we could see from the beginning, you know, the plan was to announce, enable the governor to announce that Sears Island would be the preferred location. So that's where we are today.
Well, talk about that process that you all were part of that is being touted in press releases supporting the governor's position, saying that, you know, groups of environmentalists and stakeholders worked together to come up with this plan over the last few years. Because I know when I've interviewed you all over the last couple of years, right from the start, you were saying the fix is in, this is going to be on Sears Island. And I know that they were telling me, and I'm sure other reporters right from the start, oh, no, we're considering all possibilities. Becky, Steve, either one of you want to talk about your reaction? I know neither of you were surprised either.
I mean, yes, no, I wasn't surprised. Sorry to hear bad news, but I'm not surprised. They set it up. You know, it was absolutely, you know, in the cards from the very beginning. So, and we'd been waiting for an announcement, you know, really since last August. So it was, you know, it was later than we expected. There was no new information. I recently, you know, visited the MDOT website just to see if they've, you know, given the public information that they provided at a number of the offshore wind port advisory group meetings. And you can't find any of the analysis. I wanted their alternatives analysis, you know, particularly because they developed a matrix. And, you know, I called today to ask for it, you know, and they think they may be able to get it to me. But it's, you know, that's, I was not a member of the OSPAG, probably because they didn't want to have my questions be official questions. But Sierra Club had a staff person, Matt Cannon, who served in that role. So none of us were surprised. We were all disappointed at the process, and it's, you know, continuing on. And it's, you know, basically the same way that they have provided information in every other one of their applications. So I'll let you speak, Steve, next.
Sure. Well, thanks to both of you. We weren't surprised either. In fact, as a matter of fact, it was Friday, the previous Friday to this announcement that got email sort of intel suggesting that the announcement would be on Tuesday, as both Becky and Rolf have said. And we had an advocacy committee executive subcommittee meeting with counsel shortly after that. I mean, within hours of that. And began to develop our official response so that we wouldn't, so that we could have something to say fairly quickly. The ultimate result was that both that as well as communication with other organizations and mainly through the Alliance for Sears Island, began to organize a demonstration opposed to developing Sears Island for this purpose. The demonstration in Belfast did occur the day after the announcement, that early beginning to prepare for that was instrumental in making that happen. I also had written an op-ed based on our subcommittee's discussions, and had that prepared and sent that to the Portland Press Herald on Tuesday, shortly after the announcement. Took them a few days to publish it, but it was eventually published. We decided early on that one of the primary objections or concerns that we would raise because of this announcement was that it was breaking a promise. And the truth is there are several promises that we think this actually does renege on, but the chief promise is a clause in a consensus agreement that Governor Baldacci accepted and he adopted as sort of a policy, state policy, and so did the Joint Committee on Transportation at that time. And this key clause in the consensus agreement said that preference shall be given to developing Mack Point, so instead of Sears Island. Language matters, and it says that preference shall be given. That's not like an option. It says that will be what happens. And Becky was part of the Sears Island Planning Initiative, which this consensus agreement was a result of.
So that was after the LNG proposal.
Yes.
So that committee came out with some guidance that's supposed to be used in how to move forward if the one-third of the island, about 300 acres that was set aside for transportation uses, were to be used. One of the considerations first is supposed to be whether or not it could be built on Mack Point, right?
That's correct. And every single piece of evidence that we've seen, all the engineering work that's been done, including some that was commissioned by Sprague Energy for potential development at Mack Point, all of that information says that there is no problem in having a robust offshore wind manufacturing, assembling, and launching facility at Mack Point. I have not seen anything at all that says that it cannot be there. So in just sort of plain language, to say that we're going to, you know, the state is going to do this at Sears Island is breaking that promise from earlier. I also took a look at her announcement once we received a copy of that digitally. And there were two things in particular that caught my eye that I have a lot of respect for. I have a lot of respect for every fellow human. I really do, with a few exceptions. But for the most part, you know, we are all humans. But my goodness, it definitely gets very upsetting when people misspeak or they speak, that they say things that are just simply wrong. And in the governor's press release, she says, and I'm going to quote, "Sears Island is the best choice for an offshore wind port because it will cost less in the short and long term and is expected to result in less environmental harm." And there is nothing, absolutely nothing on record that shows that developing Sears Island will cost less. And there is, it just begs credulity for anybody to say that removing every piece of vegetation from 100 acres, all of the wildlife from 100 acres, and then digging up over 1 million cubic yards on that 100 acres is less environmentally damaging than a little bit of dredging over at Mack Point. It's mind-blowing that there are these kinds of claims being made by the governor of the state of Maine with no basis whatsoever in any factual information that's available to anybody else.
So let me just remind listeners before you jump in, Rolf, that you're listening to Maine Currents on WERU-FM. Up next, we'll hear from Rolf Olson from Friends of Sears Island. You just heard from Steve Miller from Islesboro Islands Trust. And before that, from Becky Bartovics from the Sierra Club Maine chapter. Is that how it's said now? Yes. And Rolf, when you jump in to respond to what Steve said, maybe after that you can also address, just for listeners' clarity, we've been talking about two different decision-making or two different groups that met, the one that Becky was on that concluded with the consent agreement in 2007 that says Mack Point should be considered first before any development on the island. But then there's the offshore wind advisory group that both you were on as well as Steve for the last couple of years that was supposed to be tasked with deciding between three potential sites: Eastport, which almost immediately was ruled out, and then between Mack Point and Sears Island as a potential site. Right from the beginning of that process, there were questions being raised about whether or not it was window dressing or if concerns about Sears Island were being taken seriously. So yeah, go ahead, Rolf.
Well, I would point out that actually Eastport was not on the table from the beginning. That was introduced after the Offshore Wind Port Advisory Group began to meet. It was introduced later, and it was done so in a way that I found almost comical, if it weren't so serious. And that was that, you know, I remember Matt Burns getting up there and showing pictures of the port and diagrams and so forth, and then describing how, you know, there would require the removal of about 6 million cubic yards of earth and stone in order to create the flat area that's large enough to accommodate the wind port. And anybody that knows Moose Island, you know, and the fact that there's one road leading on and off, and if you take a 24-yard dump truck and divide it into 6 million cubic yards, how many loads of material is that going somewhere? And it was just, he characterized it, I think, as one of the largest earth-moving projects, if it were undertaken ever, by DOT. And it was just like, well, we all think this is ludicrous, but it's on the table now just because we've got to put it there. They've got 65 feet of water at the port. The
existing port. That, it was just Sears Island and Mack Point that were on it. I thought, correct. I heard Portland mentioned early on, but being ruled out for some reason.
They talked about all Maine's ports, because Maine does have, we've got Portland, we've got actually, of course, Bath, but the problem there is the bridge, so there's an aerial obstruction. There is Rockland was mentioned, but again, not with any, you know, seriousness. And then Mack Point and Sears Island in Searsport. And of course, there was a hybrid that would do some work on Mack Point and some on Sears Island, which was kind of ludicrous too. But I guess, you know, the Offshore Wind Port Advisory Group, you know, you used the word decision before, and we were not the deciding entity. We were told right from the start there would be no vote or tally at the end of this. There would be no consensus sought, and we were there to simply advise, to give whatever input we felt was appropriate, and that it would be, and I keep reminding people of this language, you know, a robust and transparent process, which it wasn't, in my never humble opinion. But, you know, kind of getting back to what Steve said, too, about the governors, here's how we're interpreting it at Friends of Sears Island. The governor made those statements about it'll cost more on Sears Island because it MEC, I'm on MEC point because of the lease fees, that it'll, you know, somehow be scary dredging there. Well, you know, we've got some maintenance dredging that's due, too. So, you know, dredging and the Sprague Energy plan, which, as Steve properly points out, has never been openly responded to by the state, seemed to me to illustrate clearly that, in fact, they could accommodate the mission and the purpose and the actual work that needed to be done in terms of constructing these things and launching them.
And haven't they said, so the Sprague Energy and the folks who are on MEC Point are in support of it being built on MEC Point, and they have reduced the amount of dredging that would be needed by 85%. Can one of you talk about that?
I mean, they were proposed that, you know, the first announcement, which was from the Moffitt and Nichols report, was 500,000 cubic yards that they were going to have to take in order to build on MEC Point. And the Sprague analysis was 60,000 cubic yards. So, you know, those are two very different numbers. Unfortunately, there's a lot of press that went around the 500,000, and it's a number that many people can't forget. So they have not listened to the information that Sprague provided, or even one of the engineers from MDOT who was at the last offshore wind port advisory group, who, you know, actually said even less than that. I mean, somewhere around 30,000 cubic yards in his analysis. But that's never been, you know, part of what they were really willing to talk about in the public, out in public. And, you know, it's kind of inside baseball. Some of these groups that are working with them, or at least this analysis. And so it didn't really become reported. At one point, they were talking about the lease of funds that it was going to prevent. If we build it on MEC Point, it was going to be too costly for a developer to come in and develop it because the leases were going to be so high. Well, it turns out that the leases are basically an industry standard. So whether it's on MEC Point or Sears Island, it's the same amount of lease funding that a developer would have to come in and provide. But there's another whole element that has been left off of the analysis that I, you know, as we do our scoping work going forward through the permitting process, which is where Sierra Club's going to be focusing our efforts, is to, you know, make sure that the scoping process is broad and inclusive and transparent, is that they have not included anything about the cost of the infrastructure required to develop Sears Island. So for instance, the causeway is in terrible shape. After the last storm, there's been a huge amount of erosion that's happened along the causeway. And then, you know, it's built on sand. So for the size and weight of the vehicles that are going to be coming across to the island to perform the moving of the equipment, if it was developed on Sears Island, they will have to build up the causeway. And that's going to be costly. And then there's no electricity.
Would they be able, before you move on, would they be able to get the permits for that? Because the way it was built to begin with is problematic.
Well, that's a very good question. But I know that they, in previous iterations, tried to leave off doing the causeway consideration from their Sears Island development plan. Well, it's an essential part of the plan, and it cannot be left off. So that's got to be included, because they're going to have to drive out there. So one way or the other, it's got to happen. And I don't know how that's going to work. But then there's no electricity and there's no sewage. And if they are going to have 500 people, which is what their projected number is, working on Sears Island, then they're going to have to do sewage. treatment. I mean, they're going to have to figure out some kind of treatment. They're not going to probably connect the sewer to the town. So that's another whole element that has been left off. And those are all very costly items. So just to begin with, they are not comparing apples to apples in the analysis that we've been able to see.
Well, we know there, that- I mean, I'm sorry, Becky. I was told specifically by Kay Rand that, you know, she said, she wrote to me, I know that the technical background information that you're going to be looking for to support this decision isn't going to be available to you for at least a couple of weeks or so. And so all this stuff we're looking for in terms of background. And so, you know, again, from a consumer's perspective, the strategy seems to be, let's throw this scary information out there to the public and form the opinion before anybody can get their hands on the actual information. So, you know, and what I wrote, what I've written in follow-up is that what Friends of Sears Island is looking for going forward is going to be clear, quantifiable, objective, and conclusive, you know, information data that shows why to support the decision. We want to see that proof that MacPoint cannot fulfill that mission and purpose of the wind port. And we want to see, as Steve alluded to, we want to see really convincing evidence that the state has in fact fulfilled its obligations under that 2007 consensus agreement. MacPoint shall be given preference as an alternative to port development on Sears Island. I suppose you could always debate what does give preference mean. You know, does it mean if there's a $10 million difference, we can forgive it? Does it mean if there's, you know, X or Y, you know, what is that? How do you quantify that? So those are the things we're looking for, actual data.
I too, like Ralph, will be, Steve here, be looking for this information that Kay Rand is promising, but I am not yet convinced that it will have what we really want to see. I think it's a step towards information that they will end up compiling and submit with applications under NEPA and under Clean Water Act and perhaps under NRPA here in Maine. But I remain, you know, unconvinced that what we'll see in a couple of weeks is going to be answering all of our questions. But I'd like to dig just a little bit deeper into this dredging thing, because it seems to have been a point around which a lot of proponents of developing Sears Island have rallied, and it's full of, you know, I think some grave misunderstanding. We read a quote from a labor individual saying that Maine Lobster Union was opposed to having this development on MacPoint because of dredging. And yet, I was doing a little bit of research and discovered that the Maine Lobstering Union has very explicitly supported dredging almost 250,000 cubic yards of contaminated sediment in Portland Harbor, and they're in favor of that dredging. So, and then to go back to a point that Rolf made earlier, Isles Brian's Trust, and frankly, I don't know of anybody who is actually opposed to the maintenance dredging that's being proposed in the federal channel that is at the entry to MacPoint. That's more dredging, but none of the folks who are saying that dredging is bad are saying the maintenance dredging is bad. And thirdly, I guess nobody that I know of is even questioning how much dredging will be required to bring the cables 50 to 60 miles offshore into the grid. Those cables need to be buried something like 6 feet in under, and would take quite a wide channel to lay down. That's going to be a phenomenal amount of dredging through lobster management area number one, coming to shore somewhere, maybe at Cousins Island or maybe in Wiscasset. Nobody seems to be able to tell us where. But again, an immense amount of dredging that nobody is claiming is going to be problematic. So our position is dredging happens. You know, it's a fact of life. Sediment comes down waterways and accumulates embayments. And if you're going to have access by boats, you're going to probably need to do some amount of dredging at some point in time. This is minimal. Becky said around 60,000 cubic yards, maybe less. And it can be done in a way and at a time that is has very little disruption on the environment, if any. So it's a false flag, and it bothers me terribly that people are just not asking the right questions, or that they're actually presenting misleading information. And I find the environmental groups that are calling this as a reason to really literally assault Sears Island and destroy all life on 100 acres. It's more than ironic.
Well, there's also a kind of false dichotomy suggesting that dredging is worse than cutting mature coastal wetlands, mature forest coastal wetlands, because how you compare both of them. But the forests are going to take 40 or 50 years to be able to sequester the amount of carbon that they're already sequestering. And the wetlands provide, cooler water. I mean, the forested wetlands provide cooler water draining into the bay. We've already got a problem with, heated water. Anytime you cut the forest, you're going to heat up the land, and that is going to add to thermal pollution in the water. So, there are studies coming out right now about the incredible heating of our oceans. Well, this is, a huge problem worldwide, and, in this bay, which is the best lobstering territory, but it's also habitat for so many species, including, those that are rebounding because of the dams having been removed on the Penobscot River. As we've seen, a lot of fisheries rebounding, and, to affect the biota that actually feed those fish, which come from coastal wetlands. The copepods, feed on the diatoms, and those are really important in the whole embayment and the resources of the embayment. So, it is a false comparison between dredging and the ecological services that Sears Island provide. And, for the statement to say that it's least environmentally damaging is just trying to get that message out there. And that's one of the things that is required in the Army Corps of Engineers EIS, is they have to choose, they have to do an alternatives analysis and find the least impactful environmental alternative. So that's an important part of it. So, I don't know whether they think that they can persuade the Army Corps to overlook the real facts or what, but that's one of the things that's surprising about the announcement.
You're listening to a Maine Current special on WERU-FM. My guests today are Rolf Olson from Friends of Sears Island, Becky Bartovics from the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club, and Steve Miller, Islesborough Islands Trust. This is part one of a two-part special. Part two will air at this time tomorrow. There was legislation that was passed last July that the governor worked with the unions on, and part of what they wanted was to make sure that workers who were hired for these kinds of projects would be, more local, unionized. And so that legislation did pass. I'll put a link to the bill with the archives of today's program. The press release that they sent out about that was just, it didn't say anything about Sears Island, but just touting how this was going to be a boon for workers and the lobstering and protecting the bay and so forth. What I would like to ask the unions and the governor, if we get a chance moving forward, but they're not here today, so I'm going to put this out there to you, is do you think it's possible that the governor made that agreement to support that legislation based on them supporting the location on Sears Island?
I wouldn't dare to say one way or the other about that. I don't know how politics works that well.
I agree, Becky, but I also think, that from what I see now, there's backroom wheeling and dealing that happens, and it was clear because that legislation kind of hit a bump in the road before it ultimately was able to pass. So some conversations were had that enabled, those who were not in favor of it to become in favor of it.
Yeah.
We followed that process, that piece of legislation pretty carefully, Amy, we meaning Islesborough Islands Trust. We actually submitted testimony in support of it was LD 1895. But we did recommend that it be amended so that there was explicit favoring language that would explicitly favor the least environmentally damaging, you know, facility on the upland side. The procurement bill was so-called 1895 was cobbled together with some others, and it's my understanding that actually the governor was initially a little bit reluctant to sign because of some of the labor clause in protection, and that there were some modifications to the language to ensure that non-unionized shops in Maine could have equal access to the work. So that was something that she, I gather, felt strongly enough about to initially not sign the bill before those changes were made to allow non-unionized workers to get work. But one of the things about that bill that we did find a little bit troubling was that there were explicit, very clear language to protect the environment in the Gulf of Maine. And in fact, the bill ended up requiring Maine to only support the location of turbines outside of lobster management area number one. I think that that's a fine compromise or a fine clause to incorporate. We don't have a problem with that. But it was troubling to us that that bill could go to the extent to protect that environmental characteristic, but failed to explicitly protect environmental characteristics of the upland area in Penobscot Bay. If it's okay to protect, you know, a subtidal area in the Gulf of Maine, why can't we do the same for Penobscot Bay?
I know that the next step is going to be for the Department of Transportation to pick a lead agency, and they don't know yet. I just talked to them this morning. They do not know yet who will be that agency because they don't know where the funds are going to come from. If they're federal funds, then it will be a federal agency. And so there's no permitting process happening yet. And so that, you know, and that will be, it will be interesting to see if that's going to be part of the IRA or not. The Inflation Reduction Act, or we'll just say we don't have any idea about that. But if it's not, the default agency will be the Army Corps of Engineers. But until they figure out who the agency is, we won't know. But the process of scoping will be something that certainly Sierra Club is going to get involved with, you know, making sure that the scoping, that's the, you know, the parameters of the environmental impact statement are robust. Put it that way.
We're planning to keep people informed at every step of the way, and that people can sign up for email updates from Friends of Sears Island or from at the Alliance for SearsIsland.org. There's a link right on the page to sign up for updates. There will be many opportunities for public input all along the permitting process, and that's going to be essential. And when that happens, we will pump out messages letting people know what, you know, where and how to make their comments known to the process. And that's going to be important going forward. I would say that Friends of Sears Island has had an uptick in our, you know, people contacting us wondering, where can I contribute to a legal defense fund? How can I get involved? Can I help you manage events? Sign up for our email list. That's the best way to do it. And we've worked out actually with Islesboro Islands Trust that if people want to specifically donate to help with the legal aspect of things, Islesboro Islands Trust has an attorney on hand, and they are prepared, as Steve has written, to take any and all appropriate legal actions. So that's going forward from the immediate time.
Then over to you, Steve. And also, with your decades of experience dealing with stuff like this, tell us precisely how long this whole process is going to take.
It may end for me when I have a heart attack.
Don't say that.
Oh, well, you know, after so much of this stuff, you begin to wonder how much more can you really take. However, it is my understanding that Islesboro Islands Trust is in this for the long game, and that we will, like Becky said, the Sierra Club will be intervening in the permitting process and very, very carefully analyzing every single piece of information that's presented and working hard to make sure that the least environmentally damaging alternative ultimately is the one that's chosen. We'd like to see this move forward quickly. And if it were Mack Point, we'd be just, I'd just go back to walking in the woods. So far, it hasn't been working out that way. So we'll be devoting as much time and energy to bringing, shedding light on this process as we possibly can.
That was Steve Miller of the Islesboro Islands Trust, Becky Bartovics of the Maine Chapter of the Sierra Club, and Rolf Olson from Friends of Sears Island. We spoke on February 28th after the announcement that Sears Island had been selected by the Mills administration as their preferred location for building an offshore wind terminal. Representatives of the Maine AFL-CIO and Natural Resources Council of Maine, both groups support the plan, were not available to join us that day. A few weeks later, a bill from the governor, LD 2266, was referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee on a Thursday. People who learned about it on Friday spread the word, but the public hearing was scheduled for the following Monday, so there was not much time for the public to make arrangements to testify. The Mills administration had discovered that there were sand dunes on Sears Island that could pose a threat to the permitting for the wind terminal, and the governor's bill, if passed, would remove DEP protections for sand dunes on Sears Island, specifically for an offshore wind terminal. The majority of the committee voted in favor of the bill, and earlier this week, a group of residents concerned about plans to industrialize Sears Island traveled to the State House to talk with their legislators. And we checked in when they were done to see how that went.
My name is Chris Buchanan. I'm a resident of Searsport, and I'm not affiliated with any group, but I am organizing with Maine Earth First to protect Sears Island from development. So there was about 15 people that went to the State House today, very last minute, to hold signs and lobby House representatives in particular, because we're anticipating this going to a House vote right away. And lots of people were able to engage different representatives as well as some lobbyists. It does sound like the messaging coming from Democratic representatives are that they feel like they absolutely have to have this bill pass, so that Sears Island is an option for offshore wind development. You know, we tried to talk about the points regarding Mack Point being such a suitable alternative. It did seem like there was a lot of misinformation floating around out there. For example, you know, they seem to think that the dredging is going to be much more substantial if they were to pursue Mack Point. But in the presentation that we heard on Sunday and some notes that I have, one of the options in the Sprague alternative is only 60,000 cubic yards of material because they'd be actually using the existing canal that's maintained by the federal government already. So they'd only need to clear a little bit, you know, next to that of dredge material. There's a lot of cost concerns that this is going to be more expensive to develop on Mack Point. And so the people that were at the State House today, myself included, were trying to explain that Sears Island actually looks like it may be a much more expensive option. If you look at the construction costs side by side, you know, referencing like the Moffitt and Nichols study from 2021 and 2023, it's like $400 to $500 million construction costs for each site. But if you, you know, think more about what they would have to do to even begin construction on Sears Island, there's a lot of infrastructure that's not factored in. So one of the things we heard was that because Sears Island is owned by the state, it would be much less expensive to operate a facility there. However, you know, our argument is that the facility is going to be leased. You know, it's one thing for it to be built by the state, but it's another thing for it to actually be operated. And so no matter what, the state is going to be paying, you know, a fee to operate it by some kind of a subcontractor. So either location is going to have that fee. So I think that a lot of the financials are unclear. there's misinformation going around. There needs to be an environmental impact study done on Sears Island. Generally, the groups that are in favor of this, like NRCM and Maine Audubon and the Maine League of Conservation Voters, which I did talk to a rep from NRCM and Maine Audubon, they seem to think that this bill continues to allow an option for offshore wind development. And if we don't do this now in this way, we're going to miss this opportunity to like avoid climate disaster. It's very all or nothing thinking around this bill. And I think it's important for them to hear the viability of Mack Point as an option, that they do not need to disrupt Sears Island. So we talked about like the carbon sequestration role that Sears Island plays as the largest uninhabited island off of the eastern seaboard. It's going to play an even greater role as an undeveloped island in the future as more development occurs. And it's stated in federal documents as a significant ecological location. So we discussed a lot going back and forth. So the next steps from here are we're going to watch this bill. We do expect it to be voted on any day. And when we see it on the calendar the night before, we're going to ask people to come out the next day so that they're in the hallway, we're holding signs, and we're talking to people so that we can hopefully turn enough Democrats to vote against this bill.
If people want to connect with you, if there are others, it sounds like it's a group of individuals rather than really at one formed group that you're working with. If there are other people like that who want to plug in but aren't necessarily part of a group, who should they contact or how can they get involved?
We have a Facebook group now that's called Protect Wasumkeag. And we also have an email address, which is Protect Wasumkeag, and it's spelled WAHSUMKIK. At protonmail.com.
Chris also mentioned that many of the groups and individuals working to protect Sears Island are affiliated with the Alliance for Sears Island. You can find more information about them at allianceforsearsisland.org. At the time this was recorded, yesterday, the amended version of LD 2266 that the Environment and Natural Resources Committee voted on had not been posted to the legislature's website. The House agenda for Wednesday that was sent out Tuesday evening did not list a vote on the bill. Before we wrap up today, I want to follow up on the issue of LD 1895, an act regarding the procurement of energy from offshore wind resources. That's a different bill from last year. Last year, Andy O'Brien of the Maine AFL-CIO made a post on their website in response to the passage of 1895 that reads in part, "Legislators, the Mills Administration, the Maine AFL-CIO, the Maine Labor Climate Council, the Maine Building Trades, the Maine Lobstering Union, IAM 207, and environmental organizations have agreed on consensus language that will advance a major omnibus offshore wind bill in the Maine legislature. That bill will responsibly develop offshore wind in the Gulf of Maine and encourage new deepwater port construction while maintaining strong standards to ensure good-paying jobs for Maine workers, protections for wildlife, avoidance of important fishing grounds, broad stakeholder engagement, and inclusive community benefits. This compromise includes apprenticeship requirements and a ban on the use of independent contractors and temp staffing agencies. Most importantly, any non-union contractors on Maine's offshore wind projects would be required to pay statewide wage rates that unions collectively bargain with contractors," end quote. You can read that full statement at maineaflcio.org. I wondered if that compromise included the unions agreeing to support the site location in exchange for support of the bill. In part two, which will air tomorrow at this time, I had a chance to ask a union representative that question. Here's a preview.
My name is Francis Eanes. I'm the executive director of the Maine Labor Climate Council. We're a coalition of 20 labor unions and labor organizations here in Maine. And our organization from day one has been supportive of a port wherever it is located in Maine. And we support a robust and thoughtful and responsible siting and permitting process. And we also support including Sears Island. I'll take a step back at just who we are, because I think there might be some misunderstandings about who's making decisions, who's participating in them, and what our actual position is. I'm happy to clarify all that. But just taking a step back, you know, Maine Labor Climate Council is the result of years of conversation among organized labor and workers here in Maine and in other states too. We're one of, I think now 10 or 12 state-based coalitions of the labor movement coming together to tackle arguably the largest crisis facing all of us. And we start from the premise that we need to move at the pace and scale to address the climate crisis, full stop. It is also the case that if we address the climate crisis, but do not fundamentally take on questions of inequality in all of its forms, economic, racial, gender, and more, we will have failed to create the world that we all want to live in. And historically, the best parts of the labor movement have been the leading edge, whether it was the civil rights movement of the 40s, 50s, 60s, or you know, going further back and looking at who actually holds various forms of political and democratic power beyond those who are elected. And I think putting working people first and their institutions, not just for the sake of those who are in a union, but for all workers, is critical, not just for the sake of inequality, but for actually moving at the pace and scale that we need. And it's the case that workers fought for generations to organize coal and oil and natural gas and all of the fossil fuel industries that provided livelihoods for generations of people and lifted people out of poverty and gave people dignity and work. And now we're confronting the challenge of having to effectively shift and transition to new forms of clean energy, which we agree are critical. But if we don't fundamentally build out new clean energy systems, and offshore wind, I agree with Jack, is the principal source for where we are here, like we will have failed to give an off-ramp, a meaningful off-ramp, with all the skills that we actually need to retain, the workers we need to retain, need to be building these new systems. And so we fight hard, we fought really hard last year, together with a lot of other organizations, including NRCM, to win landmark legislation that the governor signed into law that creates high road environmental, labor, community benefit, and fishery protection standards in this new industry. We're really proud of that work. And that's one piece of how we approach the broader labor climate work. And we too, like Jack said a minute ago, recognize the importance of building a port as the next phase in how we can move this industry forward and reinvest in a lot of the coastal communities, including Bucksport, Searsport, Belfast, Stockton Springs, you know, farther around the bay, Castine, and elsewhere. Communities that have seen jobs leave for literally decades because employers have decided it's cheaper to go to the South or the global South. So it's an opportunity both to meet the climate crisis at the scale and pace that it demands, and it's an opportunity to equitably grow our local and regional economies and actually put working people first. So that's the big picture of where we come from.
The legislation you were talking about, which was that was LD 1895, an act regarding the procurement of energy from offshore wind resources. Did it come with any strings attached about you have to endorse whatever we say is going to be the location for it?
No, that was never part of any of the discussions.
Okay. And I just want to note for listeners that Jack just said no to that too. Go ahead, Francis.
Just to give to context, the reason the governor signed that bill and the reason there was a compromise is because the governor and the administration were clear they wanted offshore wind to happen. And it was evident to all parties by the time we got to July that there was not going to be an offshore wind bill for the governor to sign or veto that did not include high road labor standards. And so we all understood that we could come back and do this again this session, or we could just get it done and appreciate and move on from the work last session. And we really appreciate that the administration worked together with us.
Good. So you'll get those things, even if this is at that point. If it does end up being transferred somewhere else, those will still come with it.
That's correct.
That was a preview of part two of this two-part series with a couple of clips from what you'll hear tomorrow. We recently submitted a FOA request to the governor's office, that's Freedom of Access request, asking for records of any communication about the site location that might have taken place between Governor Mills and groups that support the Sears Island plan. The response to that request was, quote, "There are no records responsive to this request," end quote, which supports Francis's denial that a deal was made. Tomorrow on Part 2, Rolf Olson of Friends of Sears Island, Steve Miller of the Islesboro Islands Trust, Jack Shapiro of the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and Francis Eanes of the Maine Labor Climate Council sit down together for an uncomfortable but informative conversation about the site location decision. It's hard to sit down and hash things out with people you disagree with, especially in a public forum like this, and not everyone will agree to do it. I know that from years of experience. So I respect that the group that we'll hear from tomorrow were willing to sit down and speak with each other. And I think that it really helps to clarify how things got to the point where environmental groups in Maine are split on this issue. I came away with a better understanding of where they're all coming from. Tune in and see what you think tomorrow, Friday, from 4 to 5 p.m. on Maine Currents, which is now a pop-up show covering local independent news, views, and culture, only here on your community radio station, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, live streaming and archived shows at weru.org and on our smartphone app. And if you'd like more background on the Sears Island issue, go to weru.org, click on the Public Affairs Archives tab, and do a search for Sears Island and several programs that have been on around town, Maine Currents, and Radioactive over the years will pop up. You'll notice that there was a big gap between about 2008, just after the consent agreement was reached, and 2022, when we heard that it seemed that the fix was in for Sears Island. I'm Amy Brown. Thanks for listening.